The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everybody. Welcome once again to Afternoons with Mike. So happy to have on the line with me today a first-time guest. Jill Nelson is a correspondent for World News. And this magazine and opinion piece is so well-read around the country. Jill, it is nice to have you on the line.
Great to be with you, Mike.
We have a common friend in J.C. Derrick. And I know you've worked with him before.
Yeah, great guy.
He is a great guy. And I know from your bio that you went to University of Texas. So I'm assuming, is that where you grew up?
I actually grew up in South Dakota, in the western town of Rapid City.
So college brought you to Texas.
So I actually went to college at Colorado Christian University in Denver. In a suburb there. And then after I was married, my husband and I moved to Austin and I completed a master's degree there in Middle Eastern studies. So that's how we got to Texas.
I got it. And then from there, you moved out west and you're now out in California.
That's right. We're in Southern California now. So we've traveled the country a bit and haven't lived in the East, but we've lived a few other locations. And I think, you know, we're here for now.
Well, that is an interesting place. I'll leave it at that to be for those of us that are in Florida. I've never spent only probably a half an hour on California soil, and that was a layover at San Francisco at an airport. So that's
it's a huge state. Yes.
It's big.
Far from us.
Yeah, it's very, very big in California. But I other than that, that's about what I know. But I am grateful that you're spending the time. We're about as far apart from each other as we could be and still be in the United States here, the contiguous U.S. anyway. But it's great to have you on the program. Give us just a little bit of background about your life and how you came to know the Lord.
Well, I grew up in a Christian household and accepted Christ at the age of 5. So I was a young girl. I was actually in a Sunday school class in a small little church down there in the basement. I still remember that moment. And from there, I was discipled by a number of people through the years. I ended up going to a Christian university, continued my spiritual growth, and God continues to work in my life.
Well, what drew you to the whole field of journalism?
That's a good question. You know, I think that it began actually reading the scriptures and beginning to generate, I think, a fascination with the world and how God is at work across the globe and has been since the very beginning, even as he spoke to Abraham and called him to leave Ur.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from there, I just decided I wanted to be somebody who could go places and really report on how God is at work across the world. I had an intellectual curiosity, but I think also a spiritual curiosity, and wanted to gain a deeper understanding of how God works in the lives of people across the globe, because there's much to learn. There's much we gain from understanding how Christians around the world are living their lives.
How long were you aware of World before you joined the team?
You know, I actually, that's a really good question. I was familiar with World as a teenager, and I believe it was at Rainbow Bible Ranch. If I remember correctly, I'm getting old now, so my memory begins to fade. I think they were subscribers to World. I believe Larry Reinhold was a subscriber to World, and I remember him perhaps showing up and recommending this magazine. So I've subscribed as a teenager. And then it wasn't until I was at, till we lived in Austin, and I was actually at the University of Texas, that I began to interact with Marvin Alasky, and he invited me to join a World Journalism Institute course. And from there, I began working for World.
And I saw that you actually graduated from that course. And so that is that like an in-house type of university, more or less?
That is something that Marvin began hosting back, I want to say maybe 2004, 2005. It's a small group of people that he takes and mentors and teaches them. It's really turned into a more of a mid-career journalism intensive at this point, where people could, if they want to leave their current career and kind of enter the world of journalism, he gives kind of that training and expertise. At the time, I was in my 20s, so I was one of the older people there. I think there were a lot of university students there at the time.
Hmm. Well, I have great respect for all that you do and your writing. I've read some of your articles, and you do a great job. And JC, he is very high on your skills and said that you were one of the best. So this is awesome.
Oh, those are kind words. Those are kind words.
Well, I know you're a part of the reporting on Ukraine. All eyes, it seems, have been pointed that way, wanting to find out the inside story, wanting to know how things are. What are you hearing right now? What's the latest out of Ukraine?
Well, right now, we're seeing signs that Russian troops are moving away from the capital, away from the northern part of the country, and toward the east and the south. So they're redirecting efforts towards this Donbass region. And of course, Russian operatives took over part of that area in 2014. I was there then and saw the effects of that invasion, demolished homes. 14,000 people have died between 2014 and the start of this war. So this has been an ongoing thing, but we're seeing them redirect their efforts towards this area in anticipation of probably a second assault on the region and really a push to gain more land in the eastern part of the country in that Donbass region. And then also there's concerns that they could create a second offensive down in the south, where they've taken over land near Mariupol and some of these other areas down south and really create a push further west toward Odessa, this kind of strategic Black Sea port in Odessa. And of course, we also know that Russia took over the Crimean Peninsula in 2014 and illegally annexed it. So they kind of have that naval base there in Sevastopol. So as a result, now is the time to resupply Ukraine. And I think, clearly we need to do so quickly and strategically. And, there's concern, too. And I've talked to generals who have been saying this for years, that they could try to create a swath of land that they control that would connect that Donbass region to Crimea, because there is a water crisis in that peninsula they now control because Ukraine cut off the water supply when Russia illegally annexed it. So that could be part of what they attempt to do as well.
Now, this area where you're talking about is down in the south part, and obviously there's a lot of frontage on the sea that Ukraine has. And shipping out of there is a big deal because Ukraine provides so much of the grain for not only that area of the world, but the entire world. So it's a big deal, isn't it?
Yeah, that is a big concern. This really is a strategic region. And to allow Russian forces to have greater control of that area is not in the best interest of Europe or the West.
Now, as a journalist, as you've studied this and written about it, I think the world is a bit amazed and surprised at the tenacity, the strength, the will, the courage of President Zelensky and the entire nation, for that matter, that it's hung back. And I think one of the most amazing sights was seeing the former Miss Ukraine basically trade in her tiara for an AK-47 and donning military type gear and dress and fighting for her country. That's the kind of image that's out there, but it's really true, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it really has been amazing to see. And I will say Ukraine has done a great job with its media coverage of this war. And we've seen Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who is a former comedian and TV star, of course. He starred in Servant of the People. But we've seen him really utilize that in an effective way. And I know his approval ratings were pretty low prior to this. People did not believe he was doing what was necessary to fight corruption. and push back Russian troops in parts of the country. But we get this sense that he's been placed in this position for such a time as this.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, we're seeing this leader who is out in the streets of the capital in Kyiv, in his street clothes with his cabinet behind him, saying to the West, who had encouraged him to evacuate, look, I don't need a ride. I need ammunition. And so he's projected bravery, grit, determination, all those things we want to see from our leaders that we don't always get to see. And, you know, I think that has really inspired the Ukrainian military. And then, you know, we've seen everyday citizens show up. I mean, I think of this pastor that I've followed since 2014 who ran a prayer tent. His name is Oleg Magdych. He ran a prayer tent during the Maidan protests back in 2013 and 2014. But since then, he's been delivering supplies here and there in an armored vehicle to troops still fighting in the east. And in the eve of this invasion was at doing exactly that when the first mortar, you know, landed near where he was trying to deliver these supplies, and he had to turn around, and he promptly went and joined the territorial defense, the group of civilians who have volunteered to fight. I mean, just like you mentioned, this former Miss Ukraine, who's willing to, you know, put her crown aside and put on khakis and join the fight. So many people are doing that. And I think that is something that has really changed the trajectory of this war. People are willing to fight for their country, and they do not want Russia to take over.
Now, wouldn't it be true that these people, the Ukrainian population, they've been rather inspired, wouldn't you think, from the president's example and all of these other high-profile people who have just said, we're not going to go, we're going to fight, and willing to take on Putin and the entire Russian army?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, that is something that has really... it's continued to generate high morale in the country. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, we've seen a lot of horrifying images, but I think that's only hardened their resolve. And, you know, I would mention too, like Ukraine inviting foreign fighters to join the ranks. It's estimated that some 20,000 volunteers from, you know, I don't know, 50 some countries have been recruited to help protect Ukraine. And of course, there's issues with people showing up who haven't been vetted and handing them a rifle. But this also is a huge morale boost for Ukrainian troops who are vastly outnumbered by Russian troops, just to know that, hey, there are people who are on your side. World opinion is leaning in your direction by and large.
Now, we know that millions left the country right immediately after the invasion. Do you get any sense that some of those are going to be coming back over the border from wherever they are right now, maybe Poland or elsewhere, and going in to rejoin their country in fighting?
Well, we have, I think the numbers, the latest numbers I've seen are that more than 4 million people have left their homes and actually left the country. And of course, 7 million are internally displaced people. They've left their homes, but they're still inside Ukraine. But there was very quickly a conscription law enacted that prevented men between the ages of 18 and 60 from leaving the country. So I believe that was right around, you know, the 24th or 25th of February when that was enacted. And
mm-hmm.
I know even people trying to evacuate orphans who were in charge of orphanages who weren't allowed to leave. It took three tries to get through saying, look, I know I'm not supposed to leave, but I have to get these orphans out of this country. So they were pretty strict about that. So I think most men were not able to get out. But we are hearing now, just in the past few weeks, that a large number of Ukrainians are returning. I don't know how many are women and children, how many perhaps are men who left prior to February 24th. But, you know, still the vast majority of the numbers crossing the border are people leaving the country. But there has been an uptick in people returning. And we do know that some of those people are wanting to just return because they think this is going to be a long time before it ends, and they don't like being refugees in a foreign country. But it's very possible that there's a large number returning to say, hey, I do want to join this fight, and there are ways that I can help.
Now, there are countries I know that are providing direct aid and passageway across the border into Ukraine, in spite of the fact that our own vice president seemed to imply that Ukraine was a NATO. We know it's not a NATO country. What do you see happening with the neighboring countries that are part of NATO? Are they going to be willing, do you think, Jill, to enter the fray?
A huge amount of support from Ukraine's NATO members, because NATO neighbors, because I know they know that they could be next. There is concerns that many of these countries border Russia, like you think about the Baltic states of Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, and of course we have the Russian enclave of Kaliningrad just south of Lithuania. That worries them. They have been concerned for many years that this could be them. So as a result, they've welcomed Ukrainian refugees. They've also helped supply Ukraine with weapons in any way they can. I know Estonia has committed anti-tank missiles to Ukraine. Poland has sent tens of thousands of artillery, ammunition, and anti-aircraft missiles and drones. I believe Estonia is now discussing cutting off gas supply from Russia. Romania has sent millions of dollars worth of supplies. So they are concerned. And I think, you know, in terms of boots on the ground, that's an entirely different conversation. And I know there's many different questions surrounding the prudence behind that or lack of prudence. But you can clearly see that these countries are committed to do everything that they can to help.
What do you think would be the opinion of Zelensky over the U.S. and the things that the United States are doing with sanctions, et cetera? What do you think their opinion of us are?
Well, from what I've gathered, I think they are grateful for all that we've done. You know, we've had American troops there since 2014. Well, I'm not sure exactly which years, but at some point in time, after the 2014 invasion, training Russian troops, and I think, you know, or training Ukrainian troops. And I think that has been extremely helpful. We have been supplying lethal weapons to Ukraine. I think the Ukrainians would say it's still not enough. Like, we still need more. Of course, they would love to see us close the skies, so to speak. That would involve a level of American commitment that I don't think we're ready to make at this point for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. But I do think they say as much as we can give them in terms of intelligence and lethal weapons, the better chance that they have to push back the Russian this Russian assault, because there's no signs that Putin's going to back down anytime soon.
Though we wish he would. Jill Nelson, thank you for being with us today. I know your articles are available. People can go to WNG, that stands for World News Group, WNG.org, and then just search out Jill Nelson, and a bunch of articles are going to be there. Thank you for being with us here today.
Thanks for having me, Mike. Great to be with you.
And it was enjoyable, and we'll be right back. I'm on the line right now with Sean Sullivan. Sean is, of course, with Mission 823. And this organization really has had a wonderful outreach to Ukraine and the people there. We talked the last time on the day of the Russian invasion. So, Sean, it's great to have you back on the program. What's happening right now?
Good to talk with you again, my dear friend. Really appreciate the voice that you guys provide for not only the Christian community, but for Ukraine specifically right now. We've been extremely busy in the last 30 plus days, complete shift in our ministry focus, still accomplishing the same goals, but in very, very different ways now.
Oh, I'm sure it is. And I know a lot of people that have tried to reach out and send provisions. Some of them are going in, we hear. Others seem to have been detained and maybe stopped altogether. But I know that you guys have some input into the country, right?
Yes, sir. More than that, our team is all national Ukrainian team. And so basically to frame it completely, we never left. Our team has been working around the clock every day since this escalation took place, and of course every day around the clock for the last 8 years during a wartime environment. But this is very, very different. And so we have not only our Ukrainian national team working in country, but also have lots of other Ukrainian partners and multinational groups that are helping us now, especially with rescue operations. There are some American and foreign national specialists who are helping us with rescue operations in Ukraine right now.
Okay, so give us the latest right now, Sean, if you will, on what you guys are able to do. And I know you're in touch with all of those nationals that are obviously still within the border of Ukraine right now. I'm sure that there's no safe zone, really. From what I'm hearing, random attacks still are happening, and the loss of both property and lives, it's devastating.
It absolutely is. And, you know, not only is it a typical war environment, but there are some really, really horrible atrocities taking place as enemy troops withdraw, as they're pushed back out of these conflict zones, especially north of Kyiv, and then in the east and in the south. There's kind of an open window to the west, which has calmed down significantly because they're not targeting military assets that far west at present, but most of the focus is on the east right now. That's where most of the activity is. But as these troops are pushed back and withdraw, and then Ukrainian nationals and military moves back in, just the horrible atrocities that are occurring is really disturbing, to say the very, very least.
Absolutely.
These kinds of things we just haven't seen since, you know, the brutality of World War II. Just really a strange environment for 2022. But there's a lot of hurting people, millions of people who are in desperate crisis situations right now, scattered around the north, east, and south of Ukraine.
Now, for all the damage that has been wrought on Ukraine, which is significant, obviously when you have these shellings, bombs, rockets hitting hospitals, children's hospitals at that, and then just the images that we've seen of some of the cities that are just almost obliterated, really, it is no wonder that there are calls nationally for Putin to be charged with war crimes. Would that be the feeling that you're hearing back as well?
Well, yeah, it's not just a feeling; it's personal testimony. Our director was being interviewed by about 20 or 25 journalists as they took an excursion up to the north of Kyiv, where I'm talking about north of Bucha, even where most of the stories are coming back right now. But yeah, they're getting firsthand accounts. She sent me video and picture accounts of the devastation of residential areas, intentional, blatant targeting of schools, hospitals, residential apartment complexes.
Unbelievable.
Just really, really bad stuff. And then as they occupy temporarily a particular area, this very, very brutal, just devilish kind of torture of people and execution-style things taking place, it's really a sickening kind of a display.
You know, I'm trying to get my brain around why and maybe the motives of even an enemy like that coming in. You mentioned the word devilish, and I've heard that from many people that are really laying this out as nothing less than just a demonic attack. It's almost like the demonic powers of evil are just completely engrossed in these people, and that's what they're doing, and that's why they're doing it. It makes no sense, even from, you know, you think of a typical war where there's trying to win land, they're destroying everything that they touch with all these rockets.
Yeah.
And you wonder,
it
makes no sense.
Well, it doesn't make any sense. If it were a purely geopolitical move, then obviously you would want to try to drive the people out and preserve as much useful infrastructure as possible. But that doesn't seem to be the case. There seemed to be this wanton, complete and absolute scorched earth kind of destruction taking place. And one of my team members put it this way. He said, this is a physical war, and this is a political war, and this is a financial war. But he said, those are all symptoms. He said, this is a spiritual war, because nobody can conduct war like this and not be demon possessed.
Mm. That's well said. Well, so how are you guys able right now to help your mission, which is obviously based through your ministry? How are you able to really make a difference right now, and how can people join you in that process?
Well, let me give you a quick rundown of the last 30 days. We're about to push a newsletter out, but we've made posts about these updates as they come in. But basically, in the last 30 days, Mission 823 and our partners have been able to move over 13,000 people to safety from war-torn areas the western portion of Ukraine, or across the border, even into multiple locations and routes into Europe. We purchased three vehicles for transport. Our team and our partners are constantly transporting those who are in need. But in order to focus on smaller family units and those who are in desperate need, we purchased three vehicles for our organization, and we have drivers running those constantly. We've been sponsoring 3 to 4 tour buses, 55-seaters every day, evacuating from central Ukraine. We purchased and sent 15,000 water filters. They should be landing in Poland any moment now, and we'll be able to clear customs with those and distribute. That will allow us to provide about 3 million gallons of fresh water every single day. Along with that order is another 235 multi-casualty trauma kits. These are the large medic and corpsman military grade that you would find hanging in the ceiling of a Humvee in Afghanistan or something like that. These are professional grade military medical kits for multiple casualties. Those are on that load as well. In the right behind that load came 6 semi tractor trailers of hygiene and toiletry supplies. About $1.1 million worth of product was donated by Winn-Dixie Foods.
Oh, that's great.
So those are being warehoused here in Winter Garden and prepared for air cargo shipment overseas. We are palletizing right now 2 semi-tractor trailers of medical supplies coming from a partner in Texas, and those will be prioritized and probably sent ahead of the hygiene supplies. We also are planning a packing event here in Central Florida for 100,000 high nutritional, high caloric meals. That will be packaged, 100,000 meals packaged, and those will be prioritized as well for shipment to Ukraine. We're as an organization in Ukraine, we're currently supporting 5 or 6, it's growing by the day, but it could be 7 by this afternoon, refugee centers where others have space to house and care for evacuees who are temporary and refugees who are staying for the longer term.
Mm-hmm.
And so hundreds and hundreds of people in multiple locations, because our facilities can only support 60. And both of our facilities in the West are full right now, 60-plus refugees, and then, of course, hundreds more in the other refugee centers that we're supporting. As a result of our expanded outreach and our greater need, we've hired 2 new staff members and increased our volunteer team significantly, and purchased 2 ambulances for the Parliament of Ukraine in order to help them to evacuate soldiers, veterans, and women and children from the war area. And this morning I was up early. We're running operations with logistics and command support teams that are located in different places around the world. We can't really say who those guys are, but they're specialists in a wartime theater, in a conflict type of scenario, of providing logistics and security support. So Those guys are working with us to run operations around the clock. And this morning I was making arrangements to have about 100 of our friends at a cerebral palsy care center in Kyiv transported to Sweden. So that's what I've been worried. That's why I was late for this call this morning.
Well, I tell you, you're doing a lot, and that all takes money. And how can people donate to Mission 823?
Yes, sir, and I appreciate that. The easiest way and the fastest way is to go directly to our website at mission823.com and scroll to the red link that says Ukraine War Relief, and that page will give an automatic designation for war relief in Ukraine, and 100% of those funds are over and above our regular operating capital, and so 100% of those funds are going directly to the field for assistance.
You know, so often people who are wanting to be a part, wanting to help in some way by giving a donation, they have questions about, you know, is this really going to go to where we want it to go? And with you, that's the beautiful thing. You're based right in Winter Garden, right here in Central Florida, and a person that is known by many of us. So I can attest that this is the real deal, my friends. And you can make a difference in the lives of those that are suffering so greatly by donating to Sean and the amazing work that you've not only done in the past, but now in this incredible time. I'm sure that, you know, I go back to 2.5 years ago, Sean, when you and I met. We had no idea back then. You would have had no idea of just the horrific sights and images that are coming from this area that I know you love so much. It's yeah. Changed so drastically and so unnecessarily. It's crazy yeah. What's going on.
Yeah, it's a really heartbreaking situation, but you're right. Because of our great love for Ukraine and Ukrainian people, and because of the fact that God gave us the privilege of hearing his voice and calling us to serve in this way, it is our great love and our great honor to go and remain and continue to work and support and rebuild Ukraine as they move towards victory over this enemy.
Now, I know that that's a beautiful word, victory. I think the Russians have been a little bit surprised at the willingness to fight that the Ukrainians have put up. Ukraine has battled, and I hear they've won back the Kyiv area completely, and it's back under Ukrainian control. Is that still correct?
As far as I know, yes. I have a link to an updated, it's kind of a crowdsourced site that gives you an interactive map of Ukraine and where the activities are occurring. If you go to liveuamap.com, you can actually see on a daily basis, click on each one of the links that are there on the page, red or blue, and it will show you exactly what happened in that location and when. It's updated to the minute. But it appears that you're correct, and from the reports that we're getting back from our director, who was actually there personally yesterday, that is indeed the case, that the Ukrainian forces have driven Russian and Belarusian forces back north of their own borders and have taken control of those areas where we're getting all those terrible reports from.
And that doesn't mean that they're regaining control of Kyiv as it was. There's still a lot of damage in the whole area around Kyiv, and it's just really sad to look at the images again that are coming. But, boy, they are putting up a fight, and it is wonderful. Now, how are your team members that are there? Have they made it through and their families safely so far?
In regards to our team members, none of them have left the country. We have one staff member whose wife and newborn baby literally was, when I was there just a few weeks ago, was born 2 days after I got home, and then the war started immediately. And mm-hmm. in fear for the safety and health of the baby and the mother, they evacuated to Europe. But the father and husband is still in Ukraine, part of our team, and all of our other team members are still in Ukraine serving in the country with their families. And our director is actually still in Kyiv and refused evacuation because she feels so strongly with her family that they should be serving their community locally.
Now, a lot of people did leave. A lot of Ukrainians left. I've heard numbers ranging close to 2 million. Is that correct? And do you think any of those might be coming back now that there's been such a fight and a resistance? Do you see Ukrainians coming back to join with the fight to protect their country?
I do. And I guess at the peak of the evacuation going westward, there was close to 4 million, almost 3.7, 3.8 million Ukrainians that had crossed the border at that stage. But many of those families are returning to Ukraine. They've either simply run out of money and can't live abroad and have no choice, or they feel compelled to go back and help no matter what the circumstances are. Or the third group would be those who want to go back and serve as much as they can. Just don't know exactly what to expect when they get there, but they're committed to go back and serve.
Well, we continue to pray for them. My guest is Sean Sullivan from Mission 823. Hang on, Sean. We'll be back with you in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike, and you're on The Shepherd. On the line with a man I've known the last couple of years, 2.5 years to be exact, Sean Sullivan, Mission 823. You know, you would have had no idea back when God called you into this work with Mission 823. I mean, you had a heart for ministry. You were serving as a pastor in Central Florida, but God had other plans for you, and you answered the call and started doing this wonderful work, reaching out to Ukraine and its people, and I know you just fell in love with them back then, and now to see them go through all of this, it's got to be heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking, and it's really difficult to even put into words the disappointment, I guess, in the world's expectation that once this shackle of the Soviet Union was thrown off back in 1991, 1992, mm-hmm. that forward progress would always be something that we would expect. And I guess, you talked about the motivation for some of the atrocities that are going on right now, and that question, I think, was unanswered. And the only thing that I can say is that, the Bible tells us that there's liberty with Christ, and that truth will set you free, and that Ukraine has embraced freedom and liberty and freedom of the press and freedom of religion and the expression thereof, and are making significant progress towards becoming a world power economy, providing some of the most significant resources available to the world, like 25% of the entire supply of grain for
yes.
the world
yes.
comes from Ukraine. Ukraine is a rich resource, not only for themselves and Europe, but for the entire world. And this level of freedom, this level of progress, this level of success is something that is absolutely hated, vehemently hated by those who want to run, a dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you see people that are your neighbors who are succeeding and who are destroying any vestige of hope that you might continue to rebuild a Soviet empire or expand the Russian kingdom or whatever it is, when they see those hopes slipping away, it just invokes this rage. And that's what we're seeing right now in these attacks. This is not a war to conquer a nation politically and take land. This is a sheer and abject hatred, a mm-hmm. sheer blind demonic rage towards these places that they're attacking. And that's what we're seeing in this. That's the only thing that the rest of the world that I'm talking to, even our Ukrainian friends, can imagine would warrant this type of attack, because we can't find any other justification for it, or for the attack itself, and especially not for the horrible things that are happening in the midst of it.
It seems like our answer has been to put restrictions, embargoes on Russia, and seizing some of its assets that are associated with the U.S. Included in that would be both money as well as places, properties, even yachts. I mean, we're hearing about the oligarchs' yachts being taken over. Do you feel that this is making, from what you can tell, do you feel like it's made a dent in their progress in what they're wanting?
I would answer that by saying that the person that in leadership believes that is absolutely the most ignorant person I've ever encountered in my life. And the reason I say that is because the entire world knows that we're dancing around cutting off imports of Russian petroleum products because we need them and we want them, and because they make us comfortable. And literally, the only thing that is remaining that's outside of sanctions right now that is sponsoring this war effort and literally putting gas in their tank and buying bullets and buying missiles and rockets that are raining down on Ukraine right now is the gas pump that is connected to Russia's economy.
Right.
The entire world needs to say, we will not receive, purchase, facilitate, ship, transact, whatever the word you want to use, in any way, shape, or form with any Russian entity right now until this stops. A sanction on an individual oligarch is, Putin doesn't care about him. That's no pain for him. And until he personally feels pain significant enough to break this schizophrenic kind of a demonic will of his to destroy Ukraine, he will not work through diplomatic channels. Sanctions of people around him and even himself will not stop him. He will not be stopped until he is personally and physically, militarily stopped. It's just not going to be enough.
Mm. That's a very, I think, sober assessment, my friend, and I think you're right. And this is something that it's disappointing, I know, to many people here in America that we're only doing this much. And yet there are many who say, well, yes, but Russia is a nuclear power and they've already raised that alert up over there. So this is a very difficult dance, but a dance it is. And it sometimes seems to be a dance that really is more for show than it is for anything else, right?
I would say it's for more than show. There are people in leadership who have vested interests in maintaining relationships with Russia, and the fact that they can, in good conscience, or maybe not in good conscience, continue to entertain those types of relationships is, to me, unforgivable. Mm. It's unconscionable. It shows a perversion of character or a lack of character entirely when, you know, my neighbor's house is on fire and I would have to say, well, you know, I really have financial investments with the arsonist, and so I can't help you right now. Really a sickening excuse.
That's really not far from what's happening, right? I mean, that's a pretty good analogy.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's happening is basically those who have the power to make this stop by inflicting pain on the gas pump of Russian leadership are standing by idly watching our good neighbor's house burn because we have a financial vested business interest with those who are actually the arsonist.
Mm.
It's just the truth.
It's an amazing truth too. Sean, I really thank you for sharing all of this We've got a few more minutes here. Let's turn our eyes back to the people that you serve in Ukraine right now and all of your team members that are there. How can we specifically pray, other than obviously protecting their lives and all of that? Are there other things that we can pray for that are known needs right now that we can join together in prayer?
Yes, sir. There's some really specific, we're going to drill down and be very specific, but there are some things that are just difficult to find to support our efforts and our team right now. And in particular, we need at least three 10 kW minimum diesel generators that are wired for 220-240, at 50 hertz. The difficulty is not to find generators of that size. The difficulty is to find European versions that are
right.
Wired at 50 hertz because the frequency is completely different in Europe. So sourcing generators, because all of Europe is geared towards supporting this effort, and supplies are extremely limited right now. Providing funding for transport. Transport is very expensive. Fuel is very expensive, and drivers and owner operators are afraid to go into conflict zones. And so we have to help to coax them along by giving some financial incentives. And that's not wrong. I mean, that's just the fact of the world right now. So raising funding for transport specifically is necessary. finding additional trucking companies stateside. We have a good connection with Carol Fulmer, who has helped us, and Sun State Carriers of the same family connection, and they have helped us with multiple shipments to our air cargo carriers. But we can't tap those guys to donate their trucking services consistently. That's just not mm-hmm. something. They've been very, very generous. So if there are trucking company owners that could connect with us, call me directly. You can give them this number. Then that would be terrific if we could spread the opportunity to other carriers to help us to move humanitarian shipments from Texas and from Florida out to our air cargo shippers. That would be terrific. We could get those that truck space donated. And then on a really, really drilling down, no pun intended, we're drilling a brand new well at our one of our locations in the West. The groundwater well has run dry because of the number of people that are living in that facility. And so we're borrowing water from the neighbor and drilling a well as we speak, and are trying to hit an artesian spring so that we'll have clean, large volume water, and are having some difficulty finding that level in the geography, in the geology. And so literally prayer for striking water.
Yeah. Something as simple as that, but that's a huge need, especially in a wartime thing when normal infrastructure methods and maybe resources are gone, literally gone, blown up. It is just nuts what they're having to do and how they're having to live. But I know that none of us in America can even begin to get our brain wrapped around what these people that are on your team are facing on a day-to-day basis. And it's very real for them. I mean, we hear it, we see it, but then often we just turn the TV or the computer off. They can't turn it off, can they?
Right. No. And, I see it in the eyes, and I see it, in their faces, and I hear it in their voices. I talk to them on a daily basis, and they're in good spirits. My team is a strong group of faithful believers. And they live by faith and face down horrible, horrible things on a daily basis. But it wears on a soul. It just wears on you.
And it sure does.
They, like you said, they can't turn that off. Every single morning when they get up, they're going to be facing this anew. Every night when they go to bed, that's the images that are playing through their minds and logistics about how to serve those that they're dreaming about. I mean, it's a nonstop nightmare for them day and night. And so, yeah, prayers for the trauma that's being encountered mm-hmm. by our own team members. We know that we're going to have to address those concerns, and it would be great if we could swap out teams and provide, you know, tag team something and let them go on vacation, but there's nowhere to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a very big need, and we thank you for taking time out of a very busy day to help us understand with greater detail and more knowledge about what you are doing, the wonderful work of Mission 823 to Ukraine and its people. Thank you for that, Sean, and thank you for the sacrifices that you've made for years now to help these dear people. Thank you.
Well, it's my privilege, and thank you for being a voice for us and for the Ukrainian people, and God bless you all. Thank you for your assistance. Please keep up the good work.
Give us your website one more time.
Yes, sir. Mission823.com.
That simple. Mission823.com. Sean Sullivan, God bless you. And friends, thank you for being with us here on Afternoons with Mike. We'll see you next time on The Shepherd.